It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 30th. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. Just back from a really fun trip to Big Cedar Lodge in Branson, Missouri. That's right. Not easy to get to, but I have to say it is an incredible golf destination. I played the Tom Fazio designed Buffalo Ridge, which I loved. The vistas in the Ozark Mountains are just gorgeous. And this course kind of meanders through that scenery. And there are actually live buffalo roaming on the land there. And that was really cool to see. You don't see that too often, right? And we also played Tiger's Design, Payne's Valley, which opened in 2020. That was fun. But my favorites were Buffalo Ridge and the Core Crenshaw design called Ozarks National. Just spectacular. But Pines Valley, that was a lot of fun. Wide fairways, not as hilly as Buffalo Ridge and Ozarks National. But the cool thing about Pines Valley is the bonus hole that they have. It's a par 3 19th that Johnny Morris, the owner of all of this, and he's the founder of Bass Pro Shops, he built this bonus hole into the limestone cliffs. And apparently he surprised Tiger with it. And showed it to him when Tiger came back to visit when the course opened back in 2020. And it's an island green. It measures about 200 yards from the back tees. And after you play the hole, you drive the cart up along this cart path that meanders through the side of the limestone cliff. It even goes under a waterfall. It's like a ride at Disneyland. It's incredible. And you remember Tiger and Justin Thomas, they played Rory McIlroy and Justin Rose. They had an exhibition match there a couple years back to show it off. And then they have these par 3 courses that are really well done. The Top of the Rock par 3 course designed by Jack Nicklaus that overlooks Table Rock Lake, beautiful ponds and waterfalls. Gary Player designed this par 3 walking course. It's 13 holes. It's called the Mountaintop Course. And that meanders through the mountains and the limestone rock. So lots to do there. Loved every second of it. And it's really a great family destination, too. So, and I learned that Ozarks, you know, the Netflix series that everybody was so crazy about, including me, that was actually not filmed in the Ozarks in Missouri. It was filmed in Georgia. So imagine that. Anyway, Big Cedar Lodge, just a cool golf destination. Well, this morning I am very excited that the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, Molly Marcoux-Simon, she's going to join us at about 8:40. And, you know, always so much to talk about with the commissioner. She took over as the commissioner of the LPGA in August 2021. And do you know that there are four tournaments featuring the top female players in the game, including a major championship, taking place in New Jersey in a span of 6 weeks in May and June? That is unbelievable. We have the Cognizant Founders Cup, May 10 to the 14th at the Upper Montclair Country Club in Clifton, New Jersey. And this tournament, you remember me talking about it last year, it honors the 13 founding members of the LPGA. Then we'll have the Mizuho Americas Open, May 30th to June 4th. That's at Liberty National in Jersey City, and that's one of four new tournaments on the LPGA schedule. And this tournament gives the opportunity for 24 female junior golfers on the American Junior Golf Association to compete alongside the LPGA players. And if you've never been to Liberty National, it's a great opportunity to see this incredible venue. It has views of the Manhattan skyline and the Statue of Liberty. Liberty National has hosted several PGA Tour playoff tournaments in addition to the President's Cup. You remember when the President's Cup was there. And then you have the ShopRite LPGA Classic. That takes place June 7th through the 11th. That's at Seaview in Galloway Township near Atlantic City, New Jersey. And that tournament's been going on since 1986. It's moved to a different location before, but then returned to Seaview in 98. And Donald Ross, he did that design back in 1915. And then it was restored in 98 by Robert Cupp Jr. That tournament is a classic. And then the second major championship on the women's calendar, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, that takes place June 21 to the 25th at Baltusrol in Springfield, New Jersey. So, and that's such a historic club. A.W. Tillinghast design, the lower course. You have the upper and the lower course. And it was recently renovated by Gail Hans. And what a storied history with Baltusrol. It dates back to 1895, and they've hosted something like 17 major championships. So anyway, lots going on in this area. And this week, the LPGA Tour is playing in Los Angeles at the Wilshire Country Club. And the tournament is the first of four new LPGA Tour events on the calendar. As I mentioned, it's called the JM Eagle LA Championship. And Cheyenne Knight, with a bogey-free 4-under 67, grabbed a two-shot lead at 9-under over Hannah Green and Hayran Rue heading into the afternoon's final round. This is the first time Knight has had the lead in her five-year career. And if she can close out the win, it would be her second tour title she won back in 2019. And Nelly Korda, she's tied for 12th at 3-under, six shots back. We're going to have Alex Maselli on in a couple minutes, a longtime golf writer for SIGolf.com. He'll talk about, you know, what the guys are up to, what Liv is up to. Phil Mickelson recently said that there shouldn't be any question that the majors include Liv golfers. And we'll talk to him about that, about Taylor Gooch, also a LIV player. He may be affected by the USGA's criteria to get into the US Open. We'll also talk about whether LIV golfers, do you think, if he thinks they'll play in the Ryder Cup in Italy coming up at the end of September. So, and then, of course, there's always that threat that LIV would put a LIV tour for women together. And, you know, how would that affect the LPGA? So we'll get into all that. The PGA Tour Mexico Open at Vedanta. Defending champion John Rahm shot a course record for 18 holes at 10 under 61 yesterday and tied his career low round on the PGA Tour, but he still finds himself two shots behind Tony Finau. Finau maintains his lead after shooting a 6 under 66. Finau carded seven birdies, finished up with a birdie on the 18th after a bogey on the 17th, and is seeking his sixth PGA Tour title and fourth title since he finished runner-up at this tournament a year ago. So with an 18-under 194, Finau, he set the 54-hole tournament record. Just incredible. And Rahm shot a 6-under 29 on the front yesterday. And that was the first time Rahm has broken 30 on the front nine on the PGA Tour ever. And then he had four more birdies on the back, no bogeys. He was 10-under heading to the par 5 18th, hoping for an eagle and a chance to shoot a 59, but his drive ended up in a fairway bunker in a very bad spot, right up against the edge. He was able to save par there, but after the tee shot, there was little chance for that eagle. So Rahm, he missed the birdie opportunities on the 15th from 12 feet and on 16 from 6 feet. So yeah, it was possible for him to have shot that 59 yesterday. So he is two behind and tied with Ashay Bhatia. Bhatia shot an 8 under 63. And Bhatia is an interesting story. He has a special temporary membership on the PGA Tour looking for his first PGA Tour title. And a special temporary membership means that he hasn't yet earned his PGA Tour membership, but he can accept sponsor exemptions into tournaments and can play up to about a dozen PGA Tour events as a non-member. Basically, he earned enough FedEx Cup points to equal the player who finished 150th in FedEx Cup points in the prior season. So that's how he got this special temporary membership, and he's in contention. And then you have Raul Pareda from Mexico City playing in his first PGA Tour event on a sponsor's exemption. And I don't know if you saw this on Friday, but he holed out for eagle from 249 yards. 249! It was the par four 16th hole. And that's the longest distance for eagle on the PGA Tour this season. And he used a 3-wood. Unbelievable. The Inspirity Invitational PGA Tour Champions that's going on at the Woodlands in Texas, Stephen Alker, he had a 369 yesterday. He has a 3-shot lead. He's looking to become the second player to successfully defend his title there. Longer did it in 2007 and 2008. And at the LIV Golf Tournament in Singapore, Taylor Gooch and Sergio Garcia, they shared the lead after second-round play. And they only have 3 rounds, and it looks like Taylor Gooch beat Sergio in a playoff to win his second straight LIV Golf title. From the leaderboard, it looked like Gooch birdied the first playoff hole to win it. And his team, the Range Goats, it's Gooch, Bubba Watson, Tomas Peters, and Harold Varner III, they won the team title. And Phil Mickelson, during the week, you know, as I mentioned, spoke about the importance of the majors creating avenues for the LIV players and said that if the world golf rankings aren't inclusive, the majors will find another way. He said it will all iron out because it's in the best interest of everybody to have the best players. So we'll talk more about that coming up in this next segment. So coming up, Alex Maselli, longtime golf writer and colleague of mine. He's been a regular contributor to SI Golf. And he's just really all over the top stories in golf. So he's going to join us in a moment. But first, let me tell you that many of the world's best golfers will tee up at the Travelers Championship, June 21st through the 25th. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Patrick Cantlay, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion, Xander Schauffele, and many more. The Northeast only PGA Tour event will feature next-level competition, next-level thrills, next-level excitement. For tickets and information, visit travelerschampionship.com and be sure to catch all the next level action.
What happens when you combine a leader in New York energy innovation with a pioneer in offshore wind technology? You get a project that will infuse $15 billion into New York communities with well-paying jobs and reliable wind energy. We've helped 17,000 people, and our goal is to benefit millions more. Introducing a partnership between RWE and National Grid Ventures called Community Offshore Wind. Wind is the way, New York. Learn more at communityoffshorewind.com.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. And good morning to Alex Maselli, longtime golf columnist, entrepreneur. You can read Alex's work on sigolf.com. Hey, welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks, Annie.
Hey, remember the days not too long ago when there was one PGA Tour and all the top players were competing against each other week in and week out for the most part. Those were the days, right?
Yeah, it seems so long ago, and yet it doesn't seem that long ago. You know, it's kind of interesting because we had a lot of tours out there before. I mean, the Asian Tour, the European Tour, DP World Tour. You know, there were a lot of different tours out there. But now LIV seems to be something that's taken hold to a large extent. I mean, it's not even a year old. I mean, people, when you think about that part of it, it isn't even a year old. And look what the disruption it's caused in less than a year. So give it 3, 5, 7 years, if it goes that long. Most people question that. But if it does go that long, you know, what will it mean to the PGA Tour? And where will players move back and forth? There's a lot of conversation and discussion. Obviously, there's a lot of legal issues involved. But the bottom line is that this tour is less than a year old, and it has created an immense amount of disruption.
What are your overall impressions with this battle between PGA Tour versus LIV Golf, you know, in addition to just this disruption that it has caused?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the legal issues that are out there are just a waste of time and money. I mean, the only people getting rich off of this deal are the attorneys. the tour should step back, just like should step back and say, look, there's no reason for us to do this because there's no winner in this. There really isn't. So let's stop that. Let's focus on our own tours. Let's make our own tours as good as we can make them. And then down the road, maybe there's some place we can discuss it. But I think right now it's just a waste of time and money for both sides. And they're not getting anything out of it. The PIF is probably into this much deeper, meaning the private investment fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They're into this much more than they wanted to be from a legal standpoint. The money was the money. But to be forced to legally have to start disclosing things that they don't want to disclose, if it gets to that point, they're like, you know what, let's back up. We don't really want, this is not what we wanted. This is not what we signed up for.
And it looks like the suit won't even go to trial until June 2024, if then. And it's just a huge money drain for both sides. But, you know, they have unlimited funds, the Saudis.
Right. Yeah. But the problem with unlimited funds is that, not that they're going to run out, but the fact is they're going to have to do certain things that money can't stop them from doing. I mean, they can't buy them their way out of if they have to disclose information and they don't want to disclose it. At some point, there's an end route from the legal standpoint. So right now, they're at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California. And if the Ninth Circuit decides to actually take this case on, that means that the trial will not happen in June 2024. This trial may not happen until June 2026. So that means that thing is still sitting out there. At the same time, if they go all the way through with this appeal and they lose, then they're stuck with having to disclose information, which they don't want to disclose. And people have to realize it's not just disclosing information for this particular case. It means it's sitting there as precedent for future cases. And the PIF does not want that to be the case.
All right, let's talk about LIV golfers as it applies to getting into the major championships. Do you feel that they should be able to compete in all the majors, Alex, if they otherwise qualify under each major's criteria?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the difference between the PGA Tour that has 40-something events a year or the DP World Tour and the majors have one event a year. So they have to make that event the best event possible. I think Augusta National understood that. They're like, look, we do not want 15 guys that everybody knows their names not to be able to participate in our event because of what? Because they decided to go to another tour? I mean, if they had decided to go to the DP World Tour last year, would that mean the Masters would say, oh, we're going to throw our hands up and say, no, 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 or the Asian Tour or the South American Tour, whatever it is? The answer is no. So if you're the PGA of America or the USGA or the RNA, you want to have the best field possible. You do not want to have the disruption and the discussion during the early week of your tournament talking about why you didn't let X, Y, or Z in. I mean, look at what happened just now with Taylor Gooch winning in what I thought was impressive fashion, at least for two rounds in Australia. I mean, how could you keep that guy, a guy who actually made your tournament, you know, how could you keep him out, or why would you want to keep him out? And I think that's the question. So, you know, let everybody compete. That's what the whole is all about. Let them compete, and the best person will win. At least that's in theory, that's what's going to happen.
Well, with Taylor Gooch, I know he got invited to play in the PGA Championship by the PGA of America, but there was some kind of technicality in the language. The USGA changed its wording to say that those players who qualified and were eligible for the season-ending tour championship could get in, were eligible. Well, he couldn't play because obviously LIV players are not eligible to compete in PGA Tour events. So now he has to be, what, in the top 60 in the official world golf rankings to get into the US Open. And he's, what, 59 right now. So let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, why? You know, I mean, the USGA is great at making rules with wording that makes it difficult to understand to begin with. This is pretty clear that they were trying to make sure that someone like Taylor Gooch didn't get in. And the question is, why? I mean, why are you doing that? Why are you jumping on the bandwagon like that? Why would you be thinking that that made sense? And so that's a question that Mike Wan needs to answer.
Phil Mickelson said this week, Alex, that the majors must create avenues for the LIV players. And if the world golf rankings are not inclusive, the majors will find another way. He said it will all iron out because it's in the best interest of everybody to have the best players. How do you react to his statement?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. It is to the benefit of those tournaments, rather, to have the best players. I mean, there's no question about that. How it's going to iron itself out, that's more difficult. I mean, even if the official World Golf Rankings somehow give points to live players for live events, you know, will that be enough? Because, I mean, quite honestly, looking at the way the system could work, you could easily give guys points for playing in live events, but they just would be so minuscule compared to what you get on playing the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour, that it really wouldn't work. It wouldn't matter anyways. And so that doesn't make much sense. You know, people don't understand, the world rankings were developed way back in the day by IMG for one reason only, so that the majors could understand who the best players were out there, so they could either invite them or let them in. And eventually it evolved into what we have today. So, I mean, the majors are the reason why the world rankings were started, and they need to get a better foothold on what's going on with their world rankings. Because, again, if you look at somebody like Taylor Gooch, if you look at somebody like Phil Mickelson, I mean, nobody saw Brooks Koepka playing as well as he did at the Masters. These guys are not just, you know, has-beens now. They are playing very good golf against very good fields. You can't just ignore them. And that's what we're talking about, ignoring the best players in the world.
Let's talk about the Ryder Cup. And do you think the LIV players will be allowed to play in the upcoming Ryder Cup, which will be in Italy, end of September, early October?
Yeah, I think, will they be allowed to play? Yes. Will they be on the team? Neither the U.S. or the European team is going to be able to get, a LIV player will not get enough points to be able to get on the team by points. And now with only six guys getting on by points, it's a pretty small group. So that means the other six guys have to be selected on each side. And then you have to think about it. I mean, if you're Zach Johnson, is that what you want to do? If you're Luke Donald, is that what you want to do? And talking to both captains, their discussion was really, you know, if the guy's the best 12, then what I have to do is I have to go back to my guys and I have to say, look, is this going to be a problem for you? Is this going to be a disruption for you? Is this going to be an issue for you? And you can see where, you know, somebody like Dustin Johnson on the American team wouldn't be a problem or disruption. Someone like Patrick Reed on the American team may be a problem or disruption. So those are things that they'd have to figure out. The likelihood is, I think, on the U.S. side, that there's going to be a LIV player on the team is probably not very good unless one of them wins a major. On the European side, I think the odds are better because the European team has been, I would say, somewhat decimated more comparatively than the U.S. has with LIV. So it's a possibility that Luke Donald will have to look at some of those guys that have left. The question is who do you look at? I mean, he loves Sergio Garcia, but is Sergio Garcia, you know, one of the guys that you think is playing well enough to actually make his team? So that's the thing. You have to find who it is that he would be looking at. Henrik Stenson's playing better, but Ian Poulter, but, you know, Lee Westwood, no. I mean, there's just a lot of good guys that have been Ryder Cuppers for years, but are they past their expiration date is the question.
It'll be interesting to see if Zach Johnson, the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, will be inclined to maybe stay away from the non-PGA Tour players, just because maybe he's a PGA Tour guy.
You know, I would have thought that to begin with, but I think if someone stood out with no question, I mean, let's just say that Brooks Koepka, who played very well, obviously, at the Masters, and turns around and wins the PGA Championship, and turns around and wins the U.S. Open. Well, I mean, if you're Zach Johnson, you have to say, well, I can't just ignore a guy that just won two major championships and finished in the top five in the third one. So I think at that point, you have to say to yourself, you know, what's best for my team? And I think that's the difference. It's not what's best for my tour. It's what's best for my team. And I think the team would weigh in and say it would be pretty hard not to pick a Brooks Koepka.
Right. I mean, the animosity really does not seem to be amongst the players from both sides. It's really amongst the heads of each organization. Don't you agree?
And the media. I think both the media and the governing bodies are involved in this, or the tours. I mean, there's people are picking sides, but you're right. The players generally, you know, like look down at, let's take Jupiter. You know, there's 30 or 40 probably PGA Tour pros or professional golfers down there. Some of those guys that are down there are LIV guys, and they play with their tour counterparts when they're home. I mean, it's not like they don't see each other. It's not like that Dustin Johnson doesn't play with Zach Johnson sometimes, or Gary Woodland doesn't play with Brooks Koepka. I mean, it happens. And you know, they all get this. They all get what's going on, and they're all reaping, by the way, reaping huge financial benefits of what's going on. So why would they complain?
That's right. But they're still depend, you know, based on all these lawsuits, you know, intense animosity between both sides. So we'll have to see how long. Maybe both sides will just drop the suits after they, you know, drain their pockets eventually. But I'm going to be talking to the LPGA commissioner, Alex, in the next segment, Molly Marco Samal. How do you view the LIV Golf issue and the LPGA?
Well, if the LPGA is smart, they would have learned from what has happened with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. They would have seen that actually spending time, sitting down, talking would probably be the best thing for the LPGA. And, you know, right now they already, through the Aramco series, the Saudis already have a foothold in women's golf. So the question is, can the commissioner of the LPGA make the tournaments better? Can she make it better for her players? Without giving up, it's a negotiation, without giving up control of your own tour. And I think the answer is probably yes. So now she has to sit down and figure out how the best way to do that. And I think that's the question. You know, how open are you to sitting down with Aramco, which is a corporation, or, you know, the Saudi government, whoever it is you have to sit down with? You know, how open are you to sitting down with them, and how open are you to making a deal? And that's what it comes down to.
Well, I know the commissioner said on my show a year ago that she is definitely willing to sit down and talk. So she did say that. We'll find out if she's had any conversations. But I can't imagine Liv. I just don't see Liv wanting. Maybe they would want to work together, but they seem like they really want to dominate and really take over. In which case, that would not be a good thing.
Yeah, I know. Well, first of all, when they first started this, they didn't want to take over. And I'm not sure there are options in proposals that they had where they would be taking over. So there's not, I'm not going to say that they don't have that in the back of their mind. But I think in regards to the LPGA, first of all, running a tour is not that much fun. I don't know if they really want to delve into that. I think Liv is learning what running a tour is like, and it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is, no matter how much money you have. So I think if you're the LPGA, you want to sit there and figure out, okay, let's sit down and figure out the best, what's our number, what are our five top things, what are your five top things on your side? Let's figure out how we can meld them together. And I would almost venture to say that the LPGA would walk away with this, with still running their own tour. They would just have a benefactor to some extent, and someone that's going to have, you know, some involvement in their tour. They're going to be on their board and so forth and so on. But at the end of the day, I think they'd still be running their own tour. And what happens then? And I don't know if it's Liv per se. It could be a separate entity. I wouldn't suggest it is Liv. I would say it would be a separate entity that somehow is created from the Saudi side. So, you know, there's a lot going on with that whole situation. But the bottom line is that can this make it better for the LPGA player individually who struggles out there? Because, I mean, the purses aren't what they should be. The difficulty of what they have to deal with travel, the way the system is set up, where they probably don't have this, you know, they don't have the same things that the men have. So let's figure out a way to make it better for my players. And if I can do that, then I'm doing my job.
Alex Maselli, thank you so much. I love your insight. And hey, I know you're out in LA ready to play Media Day for the US Open. Enjoy, and look forward to having you on again in the future.
Thanks, Annie.
Thanks so much. All right. Well, coming up, LPGA Commissioner Molly Marco Samal. She's going to join us. Looking forward to catching up with the LPGA Commissioner. She joined us a year ago, as I mentioned. And we'll get an update on the exciting growth of the LPGA and the challenges yet to overcome for the top female golfers in the world. But first, let me tell you that many of the world's best golfers will tee up at the Travelers Championship, June 21st through the 25th. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Patrick Cantlay, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion Xander Schauffele, and many more. The Northeast's only PGA Tour event will feature next-level competition, next-level thrills, next-level excitement. For tickets and information, visit travelerschampionship.com and be sure to catch all the Next Level action.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Golf Fan Liguori, and joining me now is the commissioner of the Ladies Professional Golf Association, Molly Marcoux-Simon. Hey, Molly, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Talking Golf.
Hey, Ann. Good. Yeah, how you doing?
Good to have you on again. And wow, the LPGA will be front and center in this area with four tournaments taking place in literally a span of 6 weeks in May and June in New Jersey. And that's exciting. I mentioned the tournaments at the top of the show. You have the Cognizant Founders Cup, May 10 to 14 at Upper Montclair Country Club in Clifton, New Jersey. You have the Mizuho Americas Open, May 30th through June 4 at Liberty National in Jersey City. Of course, the ShopRite LPGA Classic, June 7th through the 11th at Seaview in Galloway Township near Atlantic City, New Jersey. And then at Baltusrol, none other than Baltusrol, the second major championship on the women's calendar, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, June 21st through the 25th. So, boy, talk about a Grand Slam home run for golf fans, right?
Yeah, I mean, go Jersey, right? I mean, this is going to be an amazing 6 to 7 weeks, and we couldn't be more excited. I mean, huge golf fans in Jersey and the New York area, Philly area. You know, we sort of hit all of the whole tri-state. So we're hoping that fans come out from all around and, you know, going to see the best golf in the world.
And you have some incredible venues. I mean, Upper Montclair, an A.W. Tillinghast design. I know Robert Trent Jones Sr. renovated it back in the 50s, but, you know, that's an incredible golf course. They've hosted tournaments for all three pro golf tours through the years. And then Liberty National, what a, you know, venue that is for the Mizuho America's Open. And then, of course, Seaview, that's a Donald Ross design. He completed it back in 1915, and then Robert Cupp Jr. restored it for the ShopRite, you know, the ShopRite LPGA Classic that's been there for a long time. And then, of course, I mentioned Baltusrol. So the venues are really strong, and not just in this area, but, you know, on the whole schedule, right?
Yeah, no, they are. And that was a big goal of ours, and I think the big goal of our major championships. I mean, these, again, as I said, these are the best women in the world. When you think about how many women play golf around the world, and to be able to say that, you know, the LPGA features the very best, is remarkable, and they should be playing on the best golf courses. And the talent is so extreme that they need to be challenged at the very best. And I think it's also great for our fans to see them playing at some of the venues that the men play and being able to compare, because I think we come out really strong on that comparison.
Well, talk a little bit more about the Cognizant Founders Cup. I just love that tournament because it really honors, you know, the women who the founding members of the LPGA.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of people know the story of the 13 founders of the LPGA. I mean, the LPGA was founded in 1950, which, you know, we've been celebrating over the last couple of years, Title IX, the 50th anniversary of Title IX. So this was 22 years before Title IX. And women were making money playing golf and were really doing it on their own in a time when, you know, people weren't really even accepting of women playing sports, let alone making sports their profession. I always look at this stat, Babe Dietrichson-Zaharias, she made $14,000 in 1950 playing golf, which, you know, $14,000 sounds like nothing. But when you take that present value of that money, and it's something like $235,000 or $250,000 in today's earning power, which is pretty remarkable given where women's sports is even now today in 2023. So these were a group of remarkable women who had a passion, had a vision. They wanted to change the world. They wanted to do hard things and show women they could do things that people traditionally thought they couldn't. So this tournament celebrates them and celebrates the accomplishments that they had in golf, but also really in women's sports, but in my mind, for women more broadly. So it's really fun. We've got a number of alumni coming back. We honor, we would honor founders. Now, really none of them, we have one founding member still alive, but not able to be there with us. But, so we're bringing back, you know, the next group, you know, of pioneers who really started and moved the LPGA forward in that next era, So this year we're honoring Betsy King and Pia Nielsen, which is really fun to be able to look back at their careers and say, kind of, how did you move the LPGA forward? And so they'll be sitting on the perch. We'll have some other alums coming through, and it's a great celebration.
And yeah, I remember seeing Nancy Lopez there last year. Have you spoken to Marlene Hagg? I think she's, what, 89 years old.
Yeah, I have not. You know, I think she's, I have not. I don't know that she's able to kind of be with us. I think she's, you know, has some dealing with some health stuff. And so we're, but yeah, Nancy, I believe Nancy's coming back again this year. She always does. She's just such an amazing ambassador of the game, and she's so committed to the LPGA. And, you know, being able to have her there and others is really important for the LPGA, because the traditions and the history are so different and so unique that we love to celebrate it. And so this is one of our favorite weeks of the year by far.
And if I remember correctly, I think the 13 LPGA founders will be inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah, all the remaining founders, all the remaining founders that weren't previously in the World Golf Hall of Fame are coming in as a group, which is, again, a really remarkable tribute to the accomplishments that they made collectively. And that's really collectively, I think, is the important word. I mean, we have a saying that Mike Wann really coined, is just act like a founder. That's part of our culture. And it's like, you know, wake up every day trying to make the game better, trying to make the organization better, and putting that first. And that's what these women did. You know, they were writing the press releases. They were pounding in the stakes. They were going out selling tickets. They were running all parts of it. And so this is, again, it's a great celebration.
So I know the LPGA has a lot to celebrate. The total prize money on the tour this year, I read, will surpass $100 million, which, I mean, when you look at, you know, where the tour has come in the last, say, 5 or 10 years, that's incredible. And like for the Cognizant Founders Cup, they're based right in New Jersey, and they continue as the tournament's title sponsor. So it's really commitments like these that make that huge difference with the LPGA.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Cognizant's purse is $3 million. We have four tournaments this year over $3 million. We're playing this week out in California at the JM Eagle LA Championship, and that's a new tournament, and the purse is $3 million. Obviously, Cognizant, we've got two others. And it's really just it's a tribute to the value that people see in what we do. So I think in New Jersey this year, before we jumped on the call, I was adding up the purses just in New Jersey. I think it's close to $17 million. KPMG Women's PGA Championship at $9 million, you know, the LPGA, the Shockley LPGA Classics at $1.75 million, Mizuho is at $2.75 million. So these are big purses that our women are playing for. But like you said, we're playing for $104 million, and I think that'll still grow throughout the course of the season. That is up 50% since 2019, and actually really 2021, because we had COVID in the middle, and 19 and 21 were basically the same amount, so it was about $70 million. That's a 50% growth in that short time. And 10 years ago in 2013, I think we were playing for something like $50 million. So that's 100% growth in the 10 years. So again, I think people are really valuing the product, they're valuing the brand, they're valuing the tremendous talent of our players, and that's resulting in some great numbers for us.
So now I read where the LPGA Tour is exploring a potential merger with the Ladies European Tour. What's the latest on that, Molly?
Yeah, we've been in a joint venture with the LET since, 2019. And I think I think it's really important to have clear pathways for players around the world and to have not have a fractured golf environment. So it's really we're a very mission-driven organization. You know, we're about being the leader in women's golf and really in women's sports, and then using our platform to elevate girls and women, both, you know, on the golf course and off the golf course. So we want to provide the clearest pathway for all players, you know, no matter what their dreams are and what they're trying to do. So we when we got involved with the LET, I think they were struggling financially. And, you know, we wanted to help grow golf, women's golf. And so that's kind of what the impetus of the partnership was. And now we're just exploring, you know, we're in this joint venture and we're exploring if there's a larger relationship to be had. But nothing specific to report. We're just talking to players on both sides, you know, both the LPGA and the LET players, and making sure that this would be a good decision for everyone. I mean, we really think, again, a combined and cohesive women's golf environment is really important.
Absolutely. And, you know, Greg Norman said recently that they would love to see a LIV ladies tour. And I was wondering if you've heard from anybody from LIV.
Yeah, no, I'm not exactly sure what specific, you know, conversations he was talking about. Again, we're pretty focused on what we're doing, and there's nothing new to report there. We're really, really bullish on, as you said before, on the direction of the LPGA and the tremendous partners that we have who really see the value in what we're doing and our mission and our values. So, yeah, nothing new to report there.
All right. So you haven't heard from anybody over there. But if do you think about how it might affect the LPGA if that were to happen?
Yeah, I mean, again, we try not to speculate. We're just really focused. We got our heads down. We're focused on the LPGA and, like I said, the great momentum that we have.
So in a Links magazine article last year, you said that only 7 to 8% of all media coverage is focused on women, and only 4 to 7% of sports sponsorship goes towards women's sports. Has that improved at all since last year, do you know?
I don't know that the numbers, you know, again, that number is a little hard to grab onto when people try to find that exact number. I do know that I think the latest statistic I saw was that $57 billion is invested in sports worldwide. And I think $1 billion of that goes to women's sports. So we've got an uphill battle. I think all women's sports are growing and it's phenomenal to see. And we're all in it together. I mean, I think we think the rising tide lifts all boats, and we're thrilled when the other sports leagues, you know, have success and when their valuations are growing and people are like viewership in all sports is growing significantly. I'm not sure if you saw last week, but we had, you know, I think 1.5 million viewers on NBC during our playoff at the Chevron Championship, which was phenomenal. I know the NCAA women's basketball had great viewership. I think all the leagues are showing tremendous growth. So there's a lot of room between, you know, whether it's 5% or 7%, there's a lot of room between 5 and 7% and obviously 93 or 95%. So I think we're focused on that, focused on you know, reducing that delta.
And I know in all your travels in business, you advocate for all women's sports, which I think is great. The LPGA has always been a leader. And, you know, if other sports do well, the LPGA is going to continue to do well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, we had a great summit last week with some of our leaders in the golf industry and some women's sports experts. And we're, as I said before, we're all in this together. I mean, it's sort of like, how do we continue to look differently? How do we break down some of the structures that have existed for a long time that make it hard for us to catch up? How do we think creatively and do things differently in the women's sports world? And so, as I said before, we're thrilled when we see great numbers in women's sports and in any sport. And I think we're also drafting off of each other. You know, we had at our event last week that was a really great summit and a really great opportunity for the golf industry to come together to think about how we elevate women's golf. And we had the chief revenue officer from Angel City, which is the one of the NWSL teams out in LA, and you know, she was phenomenal, and Jeff Smith, and she was talking about how they've been innovative and what they've done to grow their revenue and to grow their corporate sponsorship and to get more interest in women's soccer and in the game. And so we share best practices, and we all think about how we can do this together.
I love the fact that you had the PGA Tour commissioner there. You had, Seth Waugh there from the PGA of America, and Mike Wan was there. You got everybody. Normally, these guys get together at the men's events, but to have them at, you know, the first women's major on the calendar, the Chevron Championship, was key, I thought.
Yeah, and we had Artie Starrs there, who's the CEO of Topgolf, who's a great partner also. And so it's kind of like, how does the golf industry come together to elevate women's golf and use this platform that we have, because golf's such a great sport and we're also connected. How do we use that platform to, you know, be able to elevate women more broadly? And so it was great. It was phenomenal. We were thrilled that they were able to make it, and they're so committed to us and to what we're doing. And that partnership to me is everything.
Well, you've been the LPGA commissioner for what, over a year now. You're doing a great job. You hit the ground running, and just continued success. It's so exciting for, you know, the best female golfers in the world. And I know it can't be an easy job. I don't know how much golf you can actually play. You're probably too busy, but it's great to talk to you, and continued success, and hit them straight on the golf course when you do have a chance to play golf.
Okay, you too, Anne. Well, I hope you get out there as well. And I do try to play. I got to play last week at Chevron, and I'm going to play this week at the Hanwha Life Plus International Crown. We're playing at Harding Park, so I'm going to play in the Pro-Am out there next week, too. So I got to get my game in order.
I know you're a player. You're a great athlete. Molly, thank you so much. I hope you can be with us again in the future.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ann.
Thanks so much. My thanks to Molly Marcoux-Simon, to Alex Maselli, to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. All right, stay tuned for Mark Melusis, and I look forward to connecting with you next Sunday right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.